Everybody cut Finn loose. Tragedy strikes the kingdom of Atlantica, which forces Triton to outlaw music in his kingdom. But we all know that nobody puts Ariel in a corner. Wait, that's not the right 80s movie, is it? I'm Mermaid Zandria. Let's dive into The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning. Greetings and shalutations, or should I say seasons greetings and shalutations. It is December after all. Welcome to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of merfolk and media. My name is Mermaid Zandria, and yes, it is December, my dudes. That means a couple of things. Number one, we made it to the end of 2020. It feels a bit like a video game where you're almost at the final boss. You just gotta make it through the labyrinth to finally face him. I'm thinking on Little Spyro the Dragon right now, the first one. But now we've made it into the labyrinth, and the boss is waiting. But our inventory is stockpiled with vaccines, which might give us a shot. The holidays, number two, the holidays are upon us. So that means there's halls to deck, bells to jingle, and snow, snow, snow. Unless you live in Florida, where snow is considered a government hoax. That's not exactly true. I'm just saying it doesn't snow here. Someone somewhere probably thinks that, though. It is Florida, after all. And three, we conclude our Ariel series with the final, for now, installment of the Little Mermaid film franchise. Yeah, I didn't think that through when I set up Ariel Month. It happens. But before we get into that, the million sand dollar question. What's a mermaid movie club? Great question, person who just waltzed in here looking like they wound up in the wrong classroom on the first day of school. The Mermaid Movie Club is a podcast where we watch a lot of mermaid movies. That's the short version, anyway. They gotta be mermaid-centric movies. So, no, I can't dwell too much on the Disney Channel original movie, A Ring of Endless Light, because of Mermaid Misha Barton in the film's opening titles, which is a very pretty sequence, don't get me wrong, but ultimately misleading. There are no mermaids after that. What gives? I think it's like a dream Vicky has or something. I don't know. I haven't watched it since it came out. That was 2002. Anyway, mermaids, mermen, non-binary mer beings, they have to be in focus. Center stage. We see the roles they play, the social undercurrents running through their stories, and of course, mythology and history as it relates to both mermaids and to movies. Then we take that conversation over to my social media channels, all in the show notes, and share our thoughts. I know, that's not a great venue. I want to try something where we can all gather, like a forum or a Discord group or something. I thought about a Facebook group, but I don't really want to be too reliant on Facebook, and you can probably guess why. Honestly, if I could just, like, not do Facebook and not feel like I have to have some kind of presence there, that'd be great. Zuckerberg! Now, of course, there's also the option of the Anchor voice message box, where you can leave me a friendly voice message with any additional thoughts you may have on the film we just discussed, or just a nice hello. Those are always appreciated. Now, we did The Little Mermaid. We did The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Now, there's one more Little Mermaid film we need to cover, until the live-action one comes out, I guess. So, today we're going to cover that one. The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning was released on August 26, 2008 by Walt Disney Studios Home Entertainment. I think this was the last film released by Disney Toon Studios before they stopped doing hand-drawn animation and just did straight Tinkerbell and Planes films, until its closure in 2018, 10 years after Ariel's Beginning. Rather than a continuation of the story set forth by The Little Mermaid 2, Ariel's Beginning, as you could probably glean from its title, is a prequel, though not really much of an origin story. I feel like the original Little Mermaid film feels a bit more like an origin story than this one does. In this film, King Triton, heartbroken over the death of his wife, enacts a ban on music in the entire kingdom of Atlantica. Yes, Triton's wife, Ariel's mother. One question that had come up prior to this movie is, where's Ariel's mother? True that, at least up until that point, for the most part, you knew whether or not the princess's mother was alive or dead. Except Aladdin, I think? Correct me if I'm wrong. But no mention of Ariel's mother is ever made up until this film. Ariel's mother, Athena, is played by Lorelai Hill Butters, and her singing voice is supplied by Andrea Robinson. Jodie Benson and Samuel E. Wright are the only returning cast members from the original Little Mermaid film as Ariel and Sebastian, respectively. Jim Cummings takes on the role of King Triton here, as Kenneth Mars, dealing with pancreatic cancer, was too weak to supply the role. Two voice actors from Little Mermaid 2 also return, but in different roles. Ariel's sisters are played by Tara Strong, yes, Melody, as Adela and Atina, Grey Delisle as Aquata and Arista, Jennifer Hale as Alana, and Kari Wahlgren as Atina. The other Little Mermaid 2 voice actor was Rob Paulsen, and he plays two other parts in this movie. One of them is a member of the band, and the other one I forgot, but once I hear him, it's like, yep, that's Rob Paulsen. He's one of those guys where, like, you know him when you hear him. Sally Field plays our villain, Marina Del Rey, no relation to Lana, and her sidekick Benjamin is the voice of Jeff Bennett. Much like Little Mermaid 2, a lot of the crew from the original Little Mermaid film do not return for this direct-to-video prequel. This film is directed by Peggy Holmes and is one of only three films we've covered on this podcast directed by a woman. This is, I think, the 12th film that we've done, and only three of them have been directed by women. Makes you wonder. The other two were Aquamarine and Blew My Mind. James Dooley composed the score for this film, and Janine Tesori wrote new songs for the film. But to call this a musical is, I feel like it's kind of overselling it. Just IMO. This movie was originally called simply The Little Mermaid 3 and was slated for a 2007 release. In fact, a teaser for it appears on The Little Mermaid's 2006 Platinum Edition release, which I actually own. Remember in the last episode I mentioned John Lasseter, then Chief Creative Officer of Walt Disney Animation? How he didn't think all these direct-to-video sequels and releases were a good idea and cheapened the Disney brand? Ariel's Beginning is the last of these sequels, prequels, midquels, whatever-quels. After that point, yes, Disney Toon was still releasing direct-to-video films, but they were largely under the Disney Fairies banner, the Tinkerbell films, and the Plains films. Direct-to-video features ended with 2010's Tinkerbell and the Great Fairy Rescue, but Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast in 2015 was the last project from Disney Toon. Did Disney learn from this experience? I guess. They just pivoted from releasing 12 films a year directly to video to releasing 12 films a year theatrically and based around large franchises like Marvel and Star Wars. I guess not enough people were stoked about the Plains cinematic universe for Disney to bother with it after 2014. But while these films are no longer made, that doesn't stop Disney from reissuing them every so often. Not sure if that will change now that they're all on Disney Plus, and when it comes to streaming, to quote Disney Plus's biggest success story, this is the way. So, without further ado, let's check in with Ariel one last time. This is The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning. If you assumed that we were going to open on a shot of the sea, you assumed correctly. First rule of Mermaid Movie Club. Please talk about Mermaid Movie Club. Second rule of Mermaid Movie Club. Open your film under or above the sea. Nearby, at least. Keep it local. Sebastian starts us off with some narration, introducing the kingdom of Atlantica and the people of it. They're all having fun here, playing around and doing whatever it is mermaids do on days off. King Triton strolls in with his entire detail, as he usually does. Yeah, Atlantican tax dollars at work. Sand dollars, even. But this is decidedly a younger Triton than we're used to. In fact, he's apparently a natural redhead. Sure. So is his youngest daughter, little Princess Ariel. We all know she is the youngest of seven daughters of King Triton and Queen Athena of Atlantica. Wait, back it up. Who's Queen Athena? I've never heard that name before. Let me mersplain. Athena is the matriarch of the Triton clan, the Queen of Atlantica. She's Ariel's mom, guys. And it shows. In fact, Ariel is the only one of these seven children that looks a bit like either parent. In fact, Athena is the spitting image of Ariel circa 1989. I know you can't really read too deeply into this film and you can't apply logic to mermaids. I say it all the time. But I think they really wanted to sell Athena on the Ariel's mother angle, as that was a big part around the marketing around the film, I remember. And they couldn't do that if she looked more like Andrina or Aquata. Sorry, Arista, your Ali Mane moment isn't coming this time around. However, while we can't explain any kind of family resemblance apart from the youngest daughter, except for, well, assumptions about Triton's love life prior to meeting Athena, we can figure out now that the naming conventions of the seven daughters were likely inspired by Athena. Athena fits the same naming convention of having a three-syllable name beginning and ending with A, with the exception of, well, Ariel, because Ariel always has to be different. And even in Ariel's youth, it's evident. Baby Ariel shows that Disney was clearly ahead of the curve, introducing marketable baby versions of characters before the Mandalorian implanters made it fashionable. Yeah, they're not making it easy for me to block Baby Nut out of my memory. I've tried. The young princesses frolic around the surface with their parents and other merfolk, and everything seems hunky-dory. Triton gives his beloved Athena a music box. Ah, yes, he learned from Alan Bauer, didn't he? Ha ha. A music box that plays Athena's song. Aw, you shouldn't have. Yes, it seems like music is the lifeblood of Atlantica. A lot of these mers play instruments, lutes, flutes, bells, shells, you name it. Is that an old meme? That's an old meme. But this fun doesn't last, as a pirate ship rolls in and the merpeople make a quick escape, leaving their instruments behind, except for Athena. Athena tries to reach back for her precious music box, her gift from her husband, and in the process gets crushed by the oncoming ship and dies. Now, I've watched enough training videos at my job to tell you if the store's on fire, you don't run back to the back room to grab your purse before you get out. You just get out. Your things are replaceable. You are not. That's the bottom line. Athena valued her gift from the king so much that she lost her life trying to salvage it. In the process, Triton loses the thing he valued most. I'm not trying to say Athena should have left it behind just to stay with Triton, but she should have probably left it behind to, you know, stay alive in general. Again, that's 7 years of retail training experience talking. Thank you. Now, Triton and the rest of the kingdom are left to grapple with the loss of their queen. Triton is the one who ultimately recovers the music box, but can't bear to hear its song anymore, now that the one who inspired it is gone. He flings the music box to the furthest end of the sea and vows to ban music from the kingdom of Atlantica forever. Now, on one hand, that just sounds like Triton being a typical Captain No Fun, as he usually does. But now music just reminds him of his Athena, to the point where he can't bear hearing a single note. I remember when we were really young, my grandmother would always sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I think she just did it on a whim, or she did it to put us to sleep or something. But that song always reminded me of her, and it's always made me emotional, but especially after she passed away in 2017, it holds a whole new significance. Now, I didn't just stop listening to music after that point, but of course, I'm not a merman king with a volatile temperament, so that's where we're different. 10 very quiet years pass. The 7 princesses are now teenagers, I assume. We never really knew how old everyone was. How old everyone was. Except, of course, for Ariel. I'm, like, reading way too fast for my brain to catch up with. I'm sorry. They're awakened bright and early by their governess, Marina Del Rey. Again, not related to Lana. None of them are particularly excited about this. I guess they're just not morning gals. Same. Marina Del Rey's kind of rude, so it's a wonder how she got this job. Then again, they can be kind of rude to each other. Yeah, Andrina, I heard that. Her sidekick is a large green manatee named Benjamin, who has a very Winnie-the-Pooh-like demeanor as a sort of counter to Marina. There's this weird ritual of all the sisters greeting Triton in the morning, which is really strange, but Triton craves routine, it seems like. That's where he and Ariel are different. Ariel is different. Of course she is. But I'm with her here. She has an idealist father who needs familiarity in his life for the sake of comfort. Speaking from experience. The sisters greet Triton as they usually do, and Ariel suggests an adventure, because this is Ariel we're talking about. She figures, hey, we get done with all our stuff pretty early, so why not go for a swim on the reef? Nope, Triton says. That's too atypical. So they do their routine morning walk. They call it a walk, just go with it. Ariel's restless and plays a prank on Adela, which results in this kind of domino effect because this girl's just deprived of anything fun. I guess you would be as a daughter of Triton. But Triton's pissed about this, because of course he is, and reprimands Ariel, relegating her to scraping barnacles. That's the punishment for fun. Atlantica is now officially a no-fun zone. No fun to be had here in Atlantica. None. Literally, that was what Triton was punishing her for fun. Because it disrupts her sisters or something, or it's generally unbecoming or something. One thing you really have to like about Ariel is how convicted she is. While it's hard for her to win against her father, you have to appreciate her standing up for herself and what she believes in. I think that's going to be the theme of this movie, is Ariel is rebellious. Just like the first one. Back at the palace, I assume, this location's kind of ambiguous, Marina is tended to by Benjamin. Marina hates her job. Same. Marina hates looking after spoiled princesses, especially certain redheaded ones that make her job harder. She spends a good part of this scene venting to Benjamin as he gives her a manicure and responds in short, soft, one-word answers. How these two get along is beyond me. Marina is so over the top. And Benjamin, it's like putting Georgette from Oliver and Company up with Barney the Dinosaur. It's kind of a Miss Piggy and Kermit kind of situation. This is a musical number called Just One Mistake, which outlines Marina's desire to sabotage Sebastian and take over his job as Triton's attaché. If we thought Ursula was theatrical, Marina takes that and turns it all the way up to 11. I mean, she's got enough costume changes in this number to rival a Cher concert. The Bette Midler vibe this woman gives off. I keep forgetting she actually isn't Bette Midler. It's almost as if she's a RuPaul's Drag Race contestant with like 20 reveals in one performance. To match her up to past Little Mermaid villains, she's less scary and more fun. Which is kind of what I said about Morgana in comparison to Ursula. So I guess it's some kind of progression. Cut to Ariel. Poor thing left scraping barnacles off rocks in front of the palace. She encounters a nearby fish playing on the reef like he's playing a xylophone. So this kid's making music. Ariel's fascinated, but Triton's security swordfish aren't. That's when this little fishy orchestrates a quick escape with Ariel in tow. And you will not believe me when I tell you who's the brains of this operation, because it's Flounder. Freddy little guppy Flounder orchestrated a great escape. Not for long, of course, because Flounder ends up inadvertently leading the chase right back to Sebastian, where he sends Ariel back to the palace and lets Flounder off with a warning. Of course, he was just about to throw him in the dungeon. I love how Flounder is like, "I'll never make it in the slammer," because he has the voice of a 12-year-old. So Flounder swims off, and we never see him again. Spoiler alert, yes we do. Back at the palace, Ariel is salty. Salty! I mean, that's pretty common for us mermaids, but you know. Here we have some sister exposition, like how Alana is obsessed with her image and Andrina roasts her for it. Aquata confronts Arista for stealing her stuff, despite the fact that everything has an initial A on it and all their names start with A. Also, Atina. Atina really is that fish, and I don't mean that in a good way. Atina is the kiss-up. When Triton comes back to tell the girls goodnight and Ariel doesn't respond, Atina basically tells her, "You can sulk all you want, but nothing's gonna change." Important to note that Atina is the oldest sister, so she has some leverage, but God, she is that girl who reminds the teacher to collect homework. Do you feel better about yourself, Atina? Do ya? Huh? Ariel spots Flounder outside and decides to follow him. Flounder seems like the kind of guy who knows how to have fun, right? She's led into a cave, which is practically a labyrinth, but that leads her to an underground nightclub. Undersea nightclub? With a band. Playing music. And Fisher dancing to it. And who's leading this band through a grooving rendition of Harry Belafonte's 1961 hit, Jump in the Line, Shake Sonora? Yes, the same song at the end of Beetlejuice? Well, if you're watching this out of the context of the original, you'd be shocked to learn it's Sebastian. I mean, not that shocked, because obviously we all remember the beginning of it. But since we're all so familiar with the original Little Mermaid, we already know how this goes. When Sebastian runs into Ariel at this club, he panics and sends all the rest of the patrons into a frenzy. This leads to another musical number called I Remember, where Ariel remembers. She remembers a lot of things, particularly music. This is great because this is Jodie like back in her musical theater wheelhouse, something that I think was missed in the last one. While she did sing more in the second movie than the first one, I don't feel like the songs really do her many favors because she's just kind of singing the same melody, the na 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 na, just all the time. And I Remember it's probably one of the best songs in this movie, and Jodie just, it's what Ariel deserves. Triton seems to be aware of just how unruly Ariel is, so he gives Sebastian a special assignment to look after her specifically, much to the chagrin of Marina, who thought Sebastian was getting the pink slip. Nope. He just gets another thing added to the sea of things that Sebastian needs to do. Meanwhile, the sisters, mostly Atina, let's be real, interrogate Ariel over her overnight disappearance, her inexplicable humming, and this maraca that didn't just appear out of nowhere. Ariel spills the beans and even invites the sisters to join her overnight, which they all agree. Even perfect Princess Atina relents. So this is the impression I'm getting from everyone. Atina is a little miss perfect and punctual. Adela is boy crazy. Andrina is sarcastic as shell. Arista is a kleptomaniac. Alana is obsessed with beauty and her image. And then Aquata is trying her best. Because this film focuses so much on Ariel, the development of her six sisters is still a bit on surface level, but it's more than we get anywhere else, really. I mean, it's crumbs, but we'll take what we can get. That night, the girls arrive at the club, where the band is roaring through another Harry Belafonte hit, an instrumental cover of Man Smart, Woman Smarter. What we learn here is that Aquata has all the grace of one of those wacky, arm-waving, inflatable tube things that hang outside car dealerships, and Arista can wail on a saxophone. I think it's a saxophone. That was like an alto saxophone, maybe? I don't know. I didn't play sax. Somehow. Okay, but hold up. Like, how is Arista that good at saxophone when music has been banned in Atlantica for 10 years? Simmer down, bro. You're probably still going on about Star Wars The Force Awakens. It's been 5 years. Chill. Let Arista be great. She's finally getting her moment. She's been waiting for this ever since 1989. I'm pretty sure. This is especially exciting for Marina. She happens to be at the right place at the right time and discovers not only the sister's secret, but Sebastian's, and uses this opportunity to inform Triton. She's tattling. Triton promptly decides to lock up the entire band, confine the seven princesses to the palace, and destroy the catfish club. He loves destroying what he doesn't like, you know. Triton puts Marina in Sebastian's position, as we should assume Sebastian is a prisoner now. So there's that. And Ariel? Her sisters almost appear to abandon her for recklessly leading them into rebellion. Atena, girl, you agreed to it. Had you not gone, you would have probably also been the one to tattle to Marina about where everyone went in the middle of the night. Overachiever. Triton puts a special amount of focus on Ariel because, of course, not only is Ariel rebellious, but she's clearly a bad influence on her sisters. Even Atena, the perfect overachieving older sister, the most daddy's girl of all these girls, corrupted by her youngest sister's insubordination. So now everyone feels guilty, but Ariel's obviously to blame. But it's like I said, they didn't have to agree to it. I don't really want to sit here and play the blame game, although I feel like I already did. Both parties are responsible, but at the same time, I couldn't blame either of them for trying to break out of a bad situation. That was what got us here in the first place, right? When you think about it. Nobody's happy in Atlantica anymore, except a certain Marina. Marina has achieved her desired outcome, and she's on Cloud 9. Whatever the undersea equivalent of Cloud 9 is, I don't know. Nothing can go wrong for Marina right now. She's living. We reprise Just One Mistake, and it seems, based on this, that Marina just wanted the job for the power and the status it gives her. She's so self-obsessed that it's a wonder she ever worked for Triton, that she had the job as the sister's governess, almost like Miss Piggy being assigned to care for the Muppet Babies, ignoring the fact that Miss Piggy is one of the Muppet Babies, but just see where I'm going with this. Marina is concerned only about herself, and I think it's only a matter of time before Triton finds out. Back in jail, the band is trying to figure out an escape plan. They don't need to, because Ariel has snuck out again, this time to free the band, along with Flounder. She just, like, throws some heavy thing at the door and breaks the lock or something. We all seem to underestimate Ariel's physical strength, but remember, she can carry this heavy rock, and she also lifted an entire human out of the ocean at one point. Girl's got muscle. So now Ariel, Flounder, and the band are fugitives. Breaking the law. Band on the run. They fought the law and, well, the law won, but I guess this is round two. What better way to celebrate than with yet another rousing rendition of Jump in the Line, but this time, it's a cappella. These guys are like the roots of Atlantica. They can just do whatever. They're like versatile like that. Meanwhile, Triton has regrets. Regrets over being too harsh on his daughters. Maybe even regrets over trusting Marina to fill Sebastian's position. Because Marina just doesn't stop talking. She's that person who just, she's going on and on and on and on. Mostly about, like, everything she's doing and everything that concerns her. And Triton's just kind of sitting there. He's just like, He's like, he's that emoji that's just like the, like, flat face. If you know what I mean? It's hard for me to really explain that. Benjamin and Atena interrupt to let Triton know that Ariel and Sebastian have gone missing. See, I thought Atena would be the one to tell Triton that Ariel snuck out, but she doesn't actually specify that. She just says Ariel's missing. Atena probably doesn't know how Ariel disappeared, but come on. Atena, you should know her by now. I'd like to think Atena knew and covered for her, because that would actually be cool of her. I'd like to think Atena is some degree of cool. So now Marina's got to whip out the big guns, because this is on her. In this case, the big guns are a squadron of eels. Rule number 529 of the Little Mermaid universe. Eels are evil. Marina sends her six little poopsies to find Sebastian and turn him into a crab cake. And while they're at it, get Ariel out of the way too. Marina's in the mood for some mermaid tempera. Meanwhile, Ariel follows a mysterious melody. No, not that one. Into some cave of mirrors. See, whenever someone enters a cave of mirrors, it's in like a horror context, and I'm expecting some mermaid funhouse stuff. But Ariel goes in here fearlessly, checking herself out. But then she finds something. What do you think she found? If you guessed the music box that King Triton gave to Athena from the beginning of the movie, you'd be correct. Why else would they include that? Come on. Sebastian relays to Ariel memories of Triton and Athena in happier times. Turns out this was Sebastian's plan all along, to lead Ariel to the music box to facilitate its return to Triton, in hopes that he'd have a change of heart. Yeah, that was a Sebastian idea. The band is so not down, so they leave Ariel and Sebastian behind, but a stubborn flounder runs off to join Ariel and Sebastian in their mission. This looks like the beginning of a beautiful friendship. In before Ariel broke up the band. Let's stop blaming Ariel for everything for just a minute. Hold up. Military chic Marina and her band of eels have dropped in, and they mean business. Okay, these eels are scary. Flotsam and Jetsam were creepy, sure. Cloak and Dagger weren't as creepy, and Little Mermaid too, but they weren't also not eels. But these guys? They're all, like, zappy, first of all. They've got, like, electrical currents running around them. And then the teeth? They got teeth on the outside. Real eels aren't like that, but this movie has mermaids. Real eels, real electric eels, also have no fins and live in freshwater environments, but again, this movie has mermaids. I can't read too much into it. That said, I do not want to run into these guys at any point ever. I'm glad they don't exist, because these are like dinosaur eels. I don't want to know that eels like this exist. It's like huntsman spiders. Don't Google huntsman spiders if you're arachnophobic, because there are those giant spiders that are like the size of your hand. I already have to live with knowing that's a thing. And I see it in my nightmares. So it's Ariel and Flounder versus the eels, and Sebastian versus Marina before the band swoops in to save the day. Well, that didn't take long at all. Hadn't even been 10 minutes. Flounder manages to tie the eels into a giant knot with Ariel's help, and we thought underwater basket weaving was difficult. The gang celebrates victory, and Triton is almost ready to join them as he's waiting in the wings. But it's not over yet. Marina's stuck in a coral tube and drops down over Sebastian, but Ariel pushes him out of the way and is struck in the process. Now, Athena risked her life to save that music box, but Ariel risked hers to save Sebastian. Apples and oranges. I will add, though, that at some point before this, Ariel lost the music box and went back to go grab it, and I was like, Ariel, no, that's how your mom died. What are you doing? But she was fine after that. Until this point. Ariel's knocked out, laying in a heap as Triton goes to see her. I don't know what this movie was trying to accomplish here, making it look like Ariel was potentially dead, because this is quite clearly a prequel. We have two more movies that come after this chronologically where Ariel's very alive. I know the Little Mermaid is supposed to die in the original story, but not at this stage. Because this stage doesn't actually exist in the original timeline. You know. The music box plays and Triton softly sings along as Ariel comes to. He carries Ariel back to Atlantica as the band rejoices from below. Back home, Triton gathers his subjects, and his daughters, around to declare the return of music to Atlantica, and names Sebastian as the official court composer of Atlantica. Arista joins the band, that's cool. But Adela just starts kissing boys randomly here, like, Adela, that's not right. Triton places the music box onto his statue of himself and Athena, because of course he has that, which has this kind of restorative effect on the courtyard. The crops are flourishing, the birds are singing, my skin is clear, and Atlantica lives happily ever after. And that, my friends, is The Little Mermaid, Ariel's beginning. Wait, hold on. What happened to Marina Del Rey? We haven't heard from her in a minute. Normally in these movies, the villain just dies, right? Marina's actually locked up in the slammer in her prison chic. And Benjamin's right there with her. Her counselor, life partner, whatever he is. Benjamin did nothing wrong, so why is Benjamin locked up? Guilty by association? Oh well, I guess someone needs to give Marina this pep talk. Womp. Anyway, for real this time, that is The Little Mermaid, Ariel's beginning. When you have a movie sequel that goes, or prequel I guess I should say, that goes straight to DVD like this one, naturally, it's not going to be the same feeling as the original. That's to be expected. The results can be mixed. We learned that from the last episode. The general consensus with sequels or prequels is that they're not as good as the original, especially if they're straight to video, and especially if they're Star Wars. There are a few, if any, exceptions for the straight to video rule, including this one. Like, first of all, I really like how this movie looks. It's just pretty. Like, it's the colors are really bright. The animation is really smooth. I never it's really rare to see any of the characters look off model. This was animated in Toon Boom Harmony, which is a widely used animation software. I believe it's used on Rick and Morty and a number of wildly like popular cartoons. I think this was also used in Little Mermaid 2, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't consider myself an animation expert, honestly. I just think this film looks pretty. Okay? There it is. Especially like in those scenes, like in the Catfish Club, where there's all these lights, all these colors. Oh, that's one thing I really, really, really like about this movie. Like, it's a really pretty film to look at. And for me, that's kind of it. But one thing I've always wanted out of Little Mermaid is more about the sisters. I know that the animated series goes a little bit more into their characters. I want to say that's true. I have to actually like sit down and watch it instead of putting it on as background noise for once. The problem is that because Ariel is the focal point of the movie, we get crumbs from her sisters. We know one character trait for each of these girls. Andrina's a sour fish. Atina's a kiss up. Adela loves boys. They'd probably benefit from something like short cartoons on YouTube or Disney Plus, not unlike the At Home with Olaf cartoons that came out earlier this year. It seems like Disney has no interest in developing them further, but merchandising them? Shell yeah. I'd go ahead and say that the quality of the music is improved from the last one, even if there are much fewer original songs. Quality, not quantity, my friends. I Remember is exactly the kind of musical theater song that Jodie Benson is built for. Just One Mistake, on the other hand, it's clever. I don't think it's extremely memorable, but I don't know. But I just, as for the film in general, I just feel like the stakes aren't there. Not like in the first two, anyway. Yeah, we basically saw the Queen of Atlantica die, sure, but put it up against the first one. Mermaid makes Faustian deal with a sea witch to win the man she loves. Second one, young human girl betrays her entire family to fulfill her own destiny. Third one, Mermaid sets out to restore music to her kingdom, which I won't undermine the importance of music. I mean, my mom's a music teacher, and she met my dad when they were in local bands. I'm literally alive because of music. But you have to admit, it doesn't sound quite as suspenseful as the last two scenarios. We see Athena die, and later Ariel is almost sushi too. But it's just not the same. It just seems like a film that, like the second one, serves a little purpose. At least with this one, we see what happened to Ariel's mother, which seemed to be the thing that Disney was really stressing with it. Oh, but Marina Del Rey. I kind of love Marina Del Rey. Just like, because she's generally kind of fun. Like, her motivations are lame. She's, as a villain, she's lame. As a character, she's fun. You have Ursula, who wants to be queen of the ocean. You have Morgana, who just wants to flex on her dead sister. Then Marina just wants a promotion. That's kind of lame. But she's so much fun. I love all of her costume changes, her Cher, Bette Midler realness, her flair for the dramatic. Never a dull moment with Marina. But honestly, who's the best character in this movie? It's Benjamin. It is Benjamin, 100%. The soft-spoken manatee with a Kermit the Frog temperament and the voice of Winnie the Pooh. I'm aware that the voice of Winnie the Pooh is actually King Triton in this movie. No need to correct me. It's an affectation. But he's such a stark contrast to Marina that it's amusing. It's just really funny hearing, like, Marina's going all like, oh, just like, ah! And then Benjamin's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, sure. Okay. Yeah, okay. There's a character, like, really specific character that I'm thinking of that answers like that. Probably Ice Bear from We Bare Bears. That's probably who I'm thinking of. Yeah, okay. This is also a really good film for Sebastian, just because this is such a different Sebastian. We get to see his lighter side, his more fun side, and even his braver side. This is definitely a far cry from the Sebastian we got to know in the previous films, and while it seems like a deviation from character, remember that this is a prequel, and people change. I think Sebastian just got tired, honestly. I mean, you would too if you were watching teenage girls for like three films, two films? Two films, I think. I don't know. So, with all honesty, this is my least favorite of the trilogy. Watching it again this time around, I did like it a bit more, but again, I just don't really feel like it goes anywhere for me. And if I wanted to watch Footloose, I'd just watch Footloose. This is another background noise movie for me, honestly. So there's that. Now, before I officially close the books on Ariel Month, I want to offer my own Ariel story. Well, my own Jodie Benson story, really. I went to MegaCon in Orlando in 2018 when Jodie was a guest. I'd done a few MegaCons before then. I think I was there every year from 2011 to 2016 and then again in 2018, but only for that Sunday. It was the first time I'd gone to a convention with my little brother and the first time I didn't do a full weekend, but the only thing I wanted to do that day was see Jodie, and that's what I did. She held a panel, and I actually sat pretty far in the back, as that's what I tend to do. I also had like a large trident prop and I didn't want to get anyone's way. I was cosplaying as like a sort of magical girl, like Sailor Moon inspired version of Ariel that I designed for another project I was working on at the time. There's a picture of it on my Instagram somewhere. Now, usually with these panels, they'll have people line up for a Q&A if they want to ask any questions. Only once before have I done this, and that was with Ming-Na Wen at MegaCon in 2016. But I had a question prepared for Ming-Na Wen. Jodie? I went through several questions in my mind. Like, oh, I should ask her this. No, this. Wait, no, this. I should ask her this. No! Okay, you gotta make it count. But then I was at the point where I was next in line, and I was like, okay, I got it. I know exactly what I'm gonna ask. Then I'm at the front of the line. Jodie's making eye contact with me. Ariel is making eye contact with me. She points out that I'm dressed as Ariel, as does the MC. So my question for her was this, and it's significant because it was something I thought about for a long time. And it goes a little bit like this. This is not verbatim. Mermaids have been a part of literature, art, film, media in general, for centuries. Yet, whenever people think of mermaids, your character, Ariel, is the first thing that comes to mind. In all the years of mermaids, yours is the most famous. What does that mean for you? That's, again, not verbatim. The whole panel's probably on YouTube somewhere. I haven't looked because I'm kind of, embarrassed to see if I'm on it. But it's probably on YouTube. So if you find it, then I'm the last one to ask a question. If you do find it, that is. So Jodie smiles and says that, I think this is what she said. It's an immense honor for her and she's incredibly grateful. And she thanks God every day for the opportunities she's had and continues to have as Ariel. Again, not verbatim. My mind was swimming at that point. Before this, I'd seen her as a candlelight narrator at Epcot in 2014. But I was all the way back in the American Adventure, which I don't know how many feet away that is from the stage at America Gardens Theater. But yeah, I don't know. If you know, you know. 4 years later, I'm standing right in front of her, speaking to her directly. It blows my mind to this day. Also, Christopher Daniel Barnes came in like right at the beginning of the panel just to shower Jodie with love. And it was incredibly cute. And she sang Part of Your World for us, which I got on video. But my SD card crashed, so I no longer have it. But that might be on YouTube as well. So that is my Jodie Benson story. I actually meant to include it in the first Little Mermaid episode back in November and totally forgot to include it. So I just thought I'd put it in here just to kind of close the book, as it were. Thank you for that, Jodie. I will never forget that. And that will do it for The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning, and our Little Mermaid series. What a ride it's been. Look at us. We found some thingamabobs, fought sea witches, braved icy caverns, escaped stereotypical French chefs, and even brought back music. But alas, we must say goodbye to Ariel for now, until the next adventure. I mean, let's be real, she's not going to be gone for good. This is a mermaid podcast. She is like the mermaid, like I said, so she'll be back. But we can't close the books on the Mermaid Movie Club 2020 just yet. We got one more film to cover, and it's just the right film to get you in the holiday spirit. Tuesday, December 20th, tune in as we talk about A Mermaid for Christmas. It might be cold outside, but that can't stop us from enjoying a fun day at the beach in a movie based around Christmas. Yeah, Hallmark's got nothing on this. A Mermaid for Christmas appears to be exclusively available on Amazon Prime Video, but it is not free with Prime. I tried Googling it, as I do with all my movies. I search for like whatever the watchable options are. Amazon Prime Video was the only thing that came up, but if you can find it somewhere else, then feel free to watch it there. It is available as a $3.99 rental on Prime Video, or you can buy it for $9.99, which isn't a bad deal. So those are the only options I could find. But that will be our last show of 2020. And what a movie to go out on and send this godforsaken year packing. Until then, post-episode Xandria, let's take him to the outro. Thanks for tuning into the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning. Be sure to tune in on December 20th for an episode all about A Mermaid for Christmas. For more Mermaid Movie Club updates, visit the homepage at mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com and follow me on social media. All my profiles are in the show notes. We've got new episodes every second and fourth Tuesday of every month, so be sure to subscribe on the app of your choice, tell all your mer friends about the show, and please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also leave me a voice message on the Anchor app. Until then, this has been Mermaid Xandria. Have a mermaid-amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. We all know Natina, don't we?